Hello, I'm Douglas Herbert in Paris. Is Europe home alone in a hostile world as 2026 starts with a lot of bullying and bluster and, let's just say it, brute force? Now, after Venezuela, the White House has confirmed that Donald Trump is discussing, quote, a range of options to acquire Greenland. I didn't say seize, I said acquire, but it includes the option of military force. Now, not long ago, the thought of seizing Greenland would have seemed like a total joke. No one here is laughing anymore, here in Europe, that is. And I want you to first take a listen to what French President Emmanuel Macron said in the past couple of days.
Greenland is a territory under Danish sovereignty. It will remain so, and I know that the Americans will continue to work with us for peace and security in Europe.
Well, here with me today, well, one of us is here and one is in Rome. First, let's start with Nicolas Tenzer. Nicolas Tenzer, you are a foreign policy expert. You are also an author, sort of a global geopolitical philosopher, if you will. You have a blog called Tenzer Strategics. And you also, as our viewers see, now that's in French, it's called Our Warrior. That's your next book to come out. And it is, I am told by you, going to be translated into English for our viewers, but it's sort of a roadmap for where we go, the world goes in geopolitics in the years to come. And joining me from Rome is Natalie Tocci. Thank you for being here virtually, Natalie Tocci. You are you're the director of the Istituto Affari Internazionali. I hope I said that right. Apologies to our Italian viewers if I massacred the language. Thank you for being here. You, in recent years, have really taken a close look and followed EU relations, European relations, how European states sort of like reach out to the world, but also interact among each other. Both of you, we have no shortage of topics, but I want to start with that Emmanuel Macron quote. Nicolas Tenzer, we heard Emmanuel Macron there basically trying to push back, at least in words, against the idea of Donald Trump seizing Greenland. Can Europe do anything if the U.S. decides to go ahead and acquire, seize, whatever word you want to use? Can they do anything about it?
I think we have a lot of means, I think, to retaliate. I'm not talking about military means. Certainly we won't, enter a war with the U.S. I mean, that should be just absurd. But we have a lot of means. We have a lot of regulations that we can impose to the U.S. That could harm the U.S. For instance, we have the Coercion Act, in the EU. We can reinforce also the DSA and DMA regulations regarding the big tech. We can also regulate more the IA. We can have also some commercial measures, towards the U.S. And other countries. We can block also some products coming from the U.S. I mean, we have the means, but the question is, do we have the will to impose, this kind of regulation? Because for the moment, we were very soft or very mild vis-à-vis the U.S. And I think that's the true problem of the EU right now.
And Natalie Tocci, I just want to put this to you. Europe has the means, Nicolas Tenzer says, but the problem is, isn't it in a sort of delicate situation? Europe needs Donald Trump on side for Ukraine right now, to support Ukraine. It needs those security guarantees, the backstop from the U.S. But how can it have that without riling Donald Trump and saying no to him on Greenland? Can it do two things at the same time?
Well, the thing is, and perhaps the paradox, is that indeed, we keep on saying, we can't because we need the US and Ukraine. Well, no, we can't because of NATO. But these things have already been completely smashed by the United States of America, right? I mean, do we actually really think that whatever Trump says on security guarantees on Ukraine, and even if he were to sign something regarding security guarantees in Ukraine, it would actually be worth anything? We have seen basically over the course of the last year, the US siding with Russia time and time again. And now we are seeing the United States basically threatening a NATO ally. Now, if being a member of NATO, which Denmark is obviously not enough of a security guarantee to prevent the United States eventually from pursuing military action, What are we actually talking about? Thinking about US security guarantees for Ukraine. So, I mean, I think that things have gone way past the point where, we can be deluded into thinking that somehow by backing off and flattering and perhaps even a little bit self-humiliating ourselves vis-a-vis the US administration, we're actually going to gain something.
Yeah, so Nicola, I'll ask you the same question for Vladimir Putin. Is there any potential peace settlement that would be anywhere vaguely acceptable to a Russia that has said it will not allow a plan that it allows Ukraine to continue with its army, to continue in its current state?
Well, let's be very clear. First of all, there is absolutely no appetite of Putin for peace or even ceasefire.
He doesn't want peace.
No, he doesn't want. And I mean, the very aim of Mr. Putin is, of course, to fully put Ukraine under his jokes, to continue, his crimes, war crimes, crimes against humanity, crimes
You've called
genocide,
them genocide.
Every,
You've called it genocide.
Perfectly
yeah.
documented. Yeah. And then, certainly, to target Europe. One way or another. And I think all the talks that we are witnessing, they are just, a kind of shadow theater. They are completely meaningless because we perfectly know we are talking about security guarantees, about the coalition of the willings, et cetera, et cetera. But, it's for the future that will never happen. And then I think the problem is, very concretely, of course we cannot trust Mr. Trump, or we cannot trust the U.S. anymore. That's perfectly clear. Because, of course we cannot trust Mr. Trump, but even if we had, Biden administration, like new administrations, do you really think that if, Estonia or Latvia or Lithuania is attacked, they will send boots on the ground? To protect. We are alone. Europe is alone. But if I may just end on that, if we consider the military spendings of Europe, they are already three times more than the military spending of Russia.
And yet.
And so we are not a small power. Europe must be assertive. We must not be ashamed of ourselves.
And Nicola Tenta, I'll just remind our viewers, you have written that there is no other way forward but for Putin's Russia to be defeated militarily on the battlefield. Natalie Tocci, so what do you make of that? Is it a waste of time? All the talk, all the reporting, the headlines about the coalition of the willing, the meetings, the coordination, Ukraine, Europe, the U.S. Is it a waste of time, or does Europe have to go through these motions?
Absolutely. These efforts will fail. I think there's no question about it. This is not a war that is going to end in the long term in a compromise. This is an imperial war. This is not a sort of civil war. It's not an ethno-political conflict. This is an imperial war. And in history, imperial wars have ended with the victory of either one side or the other, right? You either manage to colonize or you don't manage to colonize, right? It's really rather black and white. So does this therefore mean that we Europeans should simply say, well, no, what the US is doing is completely idiotic and just kind of call it a day? I think the only reason why it's worth going through the diplomatic dance is that one thing is to have the United States basically not on your side, and another is to have the United States squarely on the other side, right? So at the moment, the instinct of the Trump administration is to side with Putin. The only reason why it hasn't done so completely is, on the one hand, because the Europeans have been trying, and the Ukrainians, have been trying to somehow keep channels of communication open. But on the other hand, because Putin has been consistently overstepping the mark. If there is a logic to the diplomatic dance, it's not because we're going to expect an outcome from it, but simply because it would be, as Europe alone, one thing is to have Europe alone with the US to one side, and one thing is to have Europe alone against Russia and the United States at the same time.
Dmitry Medvedev, Russia's former president, and also known for his real anti-West bashing, he said in the past few days that after Venezuela, Washington has no grounds to reproach Russia anymore. That the United States has burned its bridges where if it had any moral authority. Can Europe maybe, if not militarily for now, step into that moral authority role?
I think that it should. The problem is that when it comes to morality, we haven't been doing spectacularly well recently, right? Our stance in the war in Gaza has not exactly been the most principled. And let me say also our reaction to the US's toppling of the Maduro regime, illegitimate as that regime was, has not actually been stellar. Yes, you know, we now and then make reference to international law, but we have not, with the exception of a very few countries, we have not actually openly condemned the US's attack as being illegal, right? So I think that, and we haven't done it because we deep down think, on the one hand, we don't want to irk the Trump administration. On the other hand, you know, at the end of the day, Venezuela was allied with Russia, with China, so maybe it's not a bad thing. And I think that that is honestly not a particularly long-sighted approach, because ultimately, a world in which there is no law, there is not just double standards, there are no standards at all, is a world in which Europe loses the day.
Nicola Tenzer, final word here. Basically, we have had, from Europe's perspective, Russia's been a predator on the world stage. China has been a predator, a long-term predator. The U.S. now, fair to say, is a third predator.
Yes, but I think that Europe, you know, certainly is a big power and that has to respect and to comply with the principle of the rule of law. I mean, that's the very legitimacy of Europe. But, I mean, I said before that Europe was alone. Maybe it's not fully alone because we have Canada, we have Japan, we have South Korea, we have Australia, we have New Zealand, we have some other country, also some African countries, some Latin American countries. And I think we have to build this kind of alliances between all the small and medium powers who are able to resist the pressures of the so-called big power. But, I mean, Russia is not a big power. I mean, that's basically, you know, it's a kind of dead sun. I mean, certainly, you know, that it will disappear from the face of the world. China, I think we can resist China. You have already African countries resisting China.
Nicola Tenzer, we have run out of time. We are going to end it there. But ending on that positive note that Europe perhaps has the means to find a way to push back in a very difficult world. It's not entirely home alone, I think we've both agreed, but it has its work cut out as we're just barely a week into a 2026, which is off to a very rough start. I'd like to thank all of you for watching our debate today, a debate that's going to continue throughout this year and I suspect many years to come on Wither Europe in a Very Rocky World. You've been watching Talking Europe here at the debate.